This is Mae Brussel, in case you picked it up in the middle of World Watchers. I'm talking about an article in the Miami Herald this past Sunday, North and Secret Governments. It was in the San Jose Mercury also. And it's the zooming in of the Iran-Contra people into the hearings coming up and the fact that Ollie North and the White House were part of a secret government that planned to overthrow the United States government. Now, Arthur Lyman, again, was talking about the appropriations that these people had. They use Willard Zucker, and Arthur Lyman knows him well. He's a business partner of Robert Vesco, and Arthur Lyman and Simon Rifkin, his law partners, represent Robert Vesco. So they're all in this web together. The appropriations came from the Galen operation, from Otto von Bolschwing out here in Palo Alto, and from the very persons working with Ronald Reagan when he was governor out here for 8 years, getting the garden plot going and martial law put into place. And money came from the Vatican and the P2 and from Michael Ledeen as head of the Italian Seize Me, and unlimited money from Italian intelligence and the P2 Lodge, the secret lodge that was effecting a military dictatorship in Spain when it was exposed. And the CIA and Defense Department have what they call black money, unlimited money sequestered away. So the appropriations aren't hard to figure out. Ollie North and that team got Air Force and diplomatic agents and intelligence activities and airplanes and ships. They could get anything they want because this has been going on since World War II, and the profits from the drug traffic have accumulated so they can do more of what they want than they could ever do before. Now, Alphonse Chardy says that North helped draft the plan which would impose martial law. He served in the National Security Council, and while he served in the National Security Council, he was liaison to the Federal Emergency Management Agency. Now, Jack Anderson did a lot of articles on FEMA, and I have many, many files on it, but September 1st, September the 7th, and September 9th, 1984, he talked about, he called his articles Disaster Planning, Federal Government Takeover, Lust for Power, and another article called Martial Law Plan and Another Military Dictatorship. And he said the Federal Emergency Management Agency is controlled by Director Louis Giuffrida, G-I-U-F-F-R-I-D-A, who likes to be called General. He's a general. He formerly headed the California National Guard Training Center when Ronald Reagan was governor. The general, as Giuffrida is called, was brought to Washington by the old National Guard buddy of his, White House Counselor Edwin Meese, the same one who wouldn't extradite Edgar Eugene Bradley. Giuffrida and Meese are very close, and Jack Anderson's articles go into the danger of a military dictatorship of these people working together. And also, this article says, and I quoted before, that Attorney General William French Smith was opposed to the plan. He was onto the plan in 1984. The documents reveal that he was afraid of a military dictatorship. The Washington Post had a story September 3rd, 1984. Smith accuses the Federal Emergency Management Agency of a grab for power, that they want to be equivalent of a czar in this country, an emergency czar, that they were working with Robert McFarlane, the National Security Council, and it was a threat to the United States. FEMA was created in 1979, but it was the old garden plot that Reagan put together up to 1974 when he wasn't governor. It was formed in California and then moved nationally with Reagan and Meese to Washington, D.C., where the executive order for taking over the government would happen. But William French Smith was the attorney general in up till 1984 when Reagan was in and was aware of this. And what did he do? He very nicely resigned and gave the whole agency to the new Attorney General, Edwin Meese, who worked with FEMA, who worked with the garden plot, the martial law plan. So instead of watching Washington and staying in Washington to make sure nothing happened, he went out to Rockwell International to practice law in California and represents the very aerospace industry that will build Star Wars or spaceships and continue the military profits of a military takeover by the generals. A bulk of his income, I should say, comes from his affiliations with Rockwell International. So he came home to make the profits, and he turned the whole system over then to the new Attorney General Edwin Meese, who never should have had that job and was under all kinds of investigations that he passed over, as did these other appointments of Ronald Reagan's. So opposing a William French Smith isn't enough when he walked away and handed it to them, to the gang. It was in August of 1984 when Smith expressed fear that this emergency czar was created. But William French Smith comes from California, and he didn't mind the garden plot. He didn't mind the Operation Chaos, the COINTEL, the MKUltra, the hell that was California when Reagan was governor for 8 years and he was an attorney in California affiliated with Ronald Reagan. He knew what they were planning, and so he comes out looking like the clean guy. There are no clean guys in this, but he said, I sent a memo to Robert McFarlane. I didn't like it. And look how long it took to catch on that this was linked to Oliver North and all these people. Alphonse Chardy says in his article, the contingency plan was being written as part of an executive order. It was a package that would be signed and held in the National Security Council. In the event a crisis arose, it would be ready. And from 1983 to 1986, Oliver North's office in the old executive office building adjacent to the White House has been the heart of informal secret structure involved in far more than the sale of arms to Iran and the war to Nicaragua. The reason that Fawn Hall said she worked so hard, she worked 12 hours, and Oliver North worked around the clock, and his wife never saw them, was that they did the NSC job from 8 to 4. Then when everyone else left the old executive office building, these termites could get in, these rats, and run around and plan their covert operations and their military coups and their shenanigans and working with these drug dealers and go home at midnight exhausted and come back the next day because they had 4 hours more or 6 hours, you know, to work on the surreptitious things that nobody in the old executive office building might hear or know, things like the TWA hijacking, the Killer Laura incident, and other incidences. Ollie North worked with those terrorists in the Middle East. The article said North's influence was so great within the structure that he was able to have the orbits of sophisticated surveillance satellites, now listen closely, altered to follow Soviet ships around the world. He could call for the launching of high-flying spy aircraft on secret missions over Cuba and Nicaragua and become involved in sensitive domestic activities. That's what Alfonso Chardy wrote. But take another view. Remember the satellite, the spaceship Challenger that circled over the KAL as Larry McDonald, the president of Western Goals, went from Alaska into the Soviet territory to test the response of the Soviet Union as we entered their territory with the Korean pilot, and he went into the ocean, and Oliver North and the administration was writing the response to the Soviet blowing up our plane that could have caused the World War III that they had on the books for the Marshall Law Plan. We had a surveillance satellite. We actually had our spaceships orbiting exactly timing over the KAL as it was sinking on the ground, and that notorious Larry McDonald, president of the Bird Society, was wiped out. And then Carl Spitz Channel became head of the John Birch Society, the Western Goals in Washington, D.C., and Channel was the first to plead guilty in this whole Iran affair so he wouldn't have to go to court. And the administration used the KAL as they wanted the Alamo attack or killing Louis Tams. And the story of this administration is the Korean airline. It is yet to come. And he had the capacity to send surveillance satellites to follow Soviet ships flying over Cuba, Nicaragua, go for the islands over Korea, where and going to the Soviet Union, go for those ones. They were monitoring those. And the sensitive domestic activities involved Larry McDonald, Western Goals, Carl Spitz Channel, and moving the operations officially, although the offices were in the east, into the hands of Spitz Channel and Ollie North. This article says that Reagan's secret government was put together by his closest friends and advisors, including former National Security Advisor William Clark, the late CIA Director William Casey, and Attorney General Edwin Meese, where they had informal secret structure meetings and congressional investigators are going into them. Well, Clark came from California. He was in military intelligence and brought Helene Von Dahm to the TCI Corporation, Transcomputer International, headed by Mr. John Paul Getty, a well-known lover of Adolf Hitler, who had been with Hitler, a person with a fondness for the Nazi regime. I read this week that Carl Spitz Channel also admired Adolf Hitler. I mentioned last week Premier Key with Western General Westmoreland, another lover of Adolf Hitler. Clark brought Helene Von Dahm, and he was in military intelligence to California, where she worked for Otto von Bolschwing of the Waffen-SS. While she worked for Ronald Reagan, she was 8 years with both of them, the translators simultaneously. She went on to become ambassador to Vienna. Von Bolschwing was running operations in Sacramento and in Palo Alto that took and assisted Reinhard Gehlen's activities in the United States. This secret team that came to Washington was the team that worked with Reagan in California and brought their disease and their problems to Washington, D.C. This article continues, congressional investigators and current and former officials consulted for this article included members of the CIA, the State Department, the Pentagon, who do not have a full record from the beginning to the end of the secret government. Well, I suggest they get Operation Sunrise and see what Alan Dulles was doing in 1943 in Bern, Switzerland, and how Otto von Bolschwing came to this country and wasn't hung along with Adolf Eichmann, his buddy over in Israel, and check out the network of the Gehlen operation and how Ronald Reagan tapped into it at General Electric as a co-partner of the operation he had with IG Farben. The secret government isn't secret. It's documented in maybe 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 books by now. And if those people in the CIA and State Department, Pentagon want to know the beginning of the secret government, they go back to the 1943 in Bern, Switzerland, where William Donovan and Alan Dulles of the OSS were meeting with SS Karl Wolf and the network of Adolf Hitler's top agents, preparing one more time to make that war against the Soviet Union. Now, back to this article, it says President Reagan has constantly expressed his foreign policy positions to the public. He's consulted with Congress, he said, but according to sources, the administration's propensity for secret activities may have had its beginning in October 80th decision by William Casey, then Reagan's campaign manager, to create an October surprise to monitor Jimmy Carter's negotiations with Iran and the release of 52 American hostages. I mentioned last week that Barbara Honegger has a wonderful large front page story, and in these times, and two full pages in there, very well documented every sentence and word about the October 80 surprise. And this article says the October surprise group was led by Richard Allen. He then became a national security advisor as thanks for getting Reagan elected and defeating Jimmy Carter by stealing papers from Jimmy Carter's desk. And Richard Allen and William Casey, running the campaign for Ronald Reagan, who was rewarded with directorship of the CIA, thought that Carter might be able to release the hostages before the November 4th election. So one of the group's first acts in 1980 was to meet with a man from Iran who offered to release the hostages to Ronald Reagan. And according to this article, Lawrence Silberman and Richard Allen denied that they went through with the deal. But remember, when they told this reporter they didn't buy that bait, they weren't under oath. And Richard Helms of the CIA and Alan Dulles said, I would lie under oath. And they weren't under oath at all. And also, it's important to know that as soon as Ronald Reagan took his oath of office in January 21st, 1981, Israel was sending weapons to Khomeini. And they said, we wouldn't do that without the United States telling us. So while they say we didn't go for the bait, they obviously did. And they wanted him as president. And they couldn't shoot Jimmy Carter. They could steal the papers and manipulate the media. They had shot John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. And Adlai Stevenson was poisoned. And Hubert Humphrey had cancer. And Senator Frank Church had cancer. And there were no candidates except Jimmy Carter to meet. And Nelson Rockefeller, died very suddenly in the arms of Meghan Marshak with a little spilled wine on the table. And the Secret Service out in front. And there was a murder of Mary Jo Capecchini up at Chappaquiddick that eliminated Ted Kennedy. So all they had to do was steal papers that Jimmy Carter was going to say from the National Security Council, and that would be very easy to do. Now, this article says the theft of the Carter papers indicates that congressional persons now link another campaign incident to the same group, the theft of papers of Jimmy Carter's briefings about this matter of planning to release the hostages and what he would say in a debate to Reagan. Why in 1987 are they realizing that this incident is an example, one more example of what Ronald Reagan was doing to become president? There's a 1,000-page government printing office document on the Carter papers naming Robert Gray, Edwin Meese, Richard Allen, and Mr. Max Ugel. The Congress went into that and covered it up like they covered the Kennedy assassination, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the Watergate, the Korea Gate, the Carter Gate. Those papers have been there for a long time, and now as the House is falling down, they're saying, oh, there's an indication that this secret group stole some papers. It's like Louis Tamsdow, our ambassador to Costa Rica, said he doesn't read the Boland Amendment. He's helping arm the Contras, but he didn't read the law that says he can't. At what point do the agencies have to read what the government printed if they're paid to take care of those matters? Stanford Magazine had an article this month, an interview with John Ehrlichman, comparing Watergate to Contragate. And he mentioned that he'd written a novel that sort of paralleled this Ollie North in the National Security Council. And the Stanford interviewer said, isn't it the usual mode of a military person just to follow orders? Could Ollie do it alone? Wasn't he told what to do? And Ehrlichman said, one question you have to ask is, whose orders are you talking about? We had military men working in the Nixon National Security Council apparatus who turned out to be secret agents for the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, Admiral Thomas Moore. Now, Thomas Moore happens to be on the board of Western Goals that went into the arms of Spitz Channel and Ollie North. So it goes from the Watergate to the Iran-Contra Gate. But Ehrlichman said that when Henry Kissinger took his secret trip to Peking, he had a secretary on the trip. And when Admiral Moore, the Joint Chief of Staff, wanted information, Kissinger would send it back in a diplomatic pouch before President Nixon knew what was said to Chairman Mao or Chu Enlai or the head of Pakistan, Mr. Yahya Khan of Pakistan. Admiral Moore was in a position to read all the information before the president heard about it. My point is people make unwarranted assumptions, Ehrlichman said, about military men who serve the White House staff. We assume they are bright and dedicated stainless steel servants of the president of the staff they're on. And we forget that the military establishment in this country has its own interests, which may or may not coincide with the president. If the president makes an overture for peace, you've noticed how everything is blown or the peacemakers are killed. And he's giving an example through his own experiences, which is true. The Joint Chief of Staff runs the White House. It runs the National Security Council. And the Pentagon is in the driving seat, and it's not a lieutenant colonel sitting in the old executive office building. It's much bigger. Now, this article continues, shortly after Reagan's inauguration, the secret campaign group had become a secret administration group clashing with Congress and the bureaucracy. 6 weeks after Reagan was sworn in February 1981, and apparently over the State Department's objections, William Casey, the new CIA director, had proposed covert support for anti-Sandinista groups who fled after Somoza was out and the Sandinista revolution was achieved in 1979. And this article by Alfonso Chardy is saying that shortly after the inauguration, February 81, they were working on Nicaragua. But in January, they were working on Iran and Libya. But what happened between January 81, when Reagan took the oath of office, and July of 81? We're talking about 6 months. And remember that Ollie North was only on the National Security Council starting at that time. He was new. From the Marines, he went to the War College. On July 5th, 1981, 6 years ago, on World Watchers, it's just 6 years ago this week, actually 2 days ago, 6 years have passed, program number 500, I listed what happened in the 6 months that Ronald Reagan was president. And keep in mind that this team was planning to overthrow Nicaragua. But the preview of Reagan's presidency began December the 8th, before he was sworn in, when John Lennon was killed. But he was inaugurated in January of 81, and I listed these events just from January to July, not watching his whole administration. February 81, there was an attempted coup in Spain, and Theodore Shacklin, Thomas Kleins, and the Iran-Contra people have been exposed as having agents working for the DEA, working out of Madrid, Spain. There was an attempted coup to overthrow Spain. In March of 81, there was an attempted coup in the United States, where Alexander Haig, a Knight of Malta working with the Italian P2, said, "I am in charge," and George Bush, the former CIA director, would be present, and Reagan was shot by John Hinckley. John Hinckley was represented by the law office of Edward Bennett Williams. The law office of Edward Bennett Williams will be defending Oliver North. The same law office that defended the man who shot Reagan will be the law office representing Ollie North when the hearings begin tomorrow. March 81, there was an attempted coup in Dominica that involved Robert Vesco, Nazis from the South, Alabama, and the Southwest, and in Canada, Nazis and Klans. David Duke was involved with that. He wants to run for president now. It involved Robert Vesco and Arthur Lyman, the counsel asking questions tomorrow. His law office represents Vesco. Willard Zucker, the man who arranges all the finances for the Iran-Contra affair in Switzerland, is a partner of Robert Vesco and Edward Bennett Williams. The attorney for Oliver North is also an attorney, or was, for Robert Vesco. And he was going to put in swastikas and Nazis in Dominica in March 81. In May 81, there was the attempted murder of Pope John Paul II. 2 weeks before he was shot, Theodore Shacklin of Iran-Contra fame was there, working with Frank Turpel, who was training Aja, and Michael Ledeen worked with the CIA and Paul Hensey from the CIA on the attempted murder of John Paul II. He survived. May 81 was the murder of the president of Ecuador. March to May was a near coup in Italy when it was discovered that Licio Gelli of the Nazi Party, the Waffen-SS, the fascist, was planning the overthrow of Italy to put in a Nazi dictatorship. He fled to Argentina, but he fled in May of 81. He stopped in Washington in January of 81 to attend the inauguration of Ronald Reagan. In May of 81 was the murder of Zahir Rahman, president of Bangladesh. In June 81 was the near murder, the attempted murder of Algerian Foreign Minister Mohamed Sedik, who had worked with Jimmy Carter trying to get the hostages released and with the CIA. In June 81 was an attempted coup in Greece to stop Andreas Papandreou and put the military colonels back in power. In June 81 was an Operation June Bride and a plan to start attacking Libyan President Gaddafi. May of 81 was another plot that surfaced after February to overthrow Spain again. And also in March of 81, there was a sabotage of a plane which Mrs. Indira Gandhi was on. And they caught that sabotage before it happened, and then she died several years later. Don't tell me Ollie North had so much to do. He just was in this office from January, and he's supposed to be the guy that's going to take away the Constitution and put in the military dictatorship. And this team, not secret at all, I was just detailing the shocking events from the time Reagan was shot until just July of 81. That was a sample, and goodness knows, we don't know how many more of these things were happening. So, also, this article in Miami Herald mentions that Oliver North and the National Security Council were making negotiations with Argentine. The Nazi military junta, the CIA, flew the Argentine military leader to Washington, D.C., General Leopold Galtieri, to devise a secret agreement in 1981 to use the junta, the death squads, for military officers to train the Nicaraguan freedom fighters that Reagan calls. This is at a time when it was perfectly clear that the Nazis in Argentina were working with the DINA in Chile, Mr. Pinochet came in power when Salvador Allende was murdered September the 11th, 1973. So they had 8 bloody years to know about the missing people, the death squads, burning people alive in the courtyard practically in Argentina, the mothers marching, the children missing, bodies in the river. This was going on, and Colonial Dignidad was a joint operation between Chile and Argentina. And SS Carl Wolff, who designed the floating gas chambers in Germany, came out when Pinochet was put into power by the CIA and the ITT, and wearing the armbands and the swastikas. So we had 8 years of watching Mr. Pinochet, who we put into power, and we were arranging through Ollie North and the National Security Council to fly Galtieri to Washington. And I mentioned several weeks ago that he was training the great freedom fighters, the Contras, until the Falklands War, where he thought that America would defend Argentina. And when we didn't defend them and sided with the British, he had to bring his soldiers home, and then the government was cleaned out. The military men are now back in power, and they have amnesty, most of them, for all of the murders and tortures they did. We flew this Galtieri to Washington, D.C., and Alfonso Chardy wrote, "It isn't clear if William Casey cleared the plan with President Reagan. What kind of piece of paper do you need to know when the Argentinas are training the Contras?" Ronald Reagan worked with Helena von Damm again. He worked with Otto von Bolschwing in the network, and John Paul Getty in San Francisco. He worked with Emanuel Senecas from Fairchild and Schlumberger, and he formerly was with ITT. He worked with all these hard Nazis. He knew them. He had planned martial law in California. These are simply clearances on paper, national newspapers giving us a good story, but making apologies as if Ronald Reagan didn't know what the Argentine junta was doing in 1981, and Licio Gelli's down there in Argentina, and he fled there, and he's at Reagan's inauguration. If he didn't know that, he should be out at that point anyway. And to make apologies at this date, it's a little late. And then the article goes on, at this time, during this whole period, 1981, Oliver North moved to the National Security Council from the Marine Corps. He was the liaison between the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the National Security Council, where they produced the plan for the imposition of martial law. This was in 1981, and those who worked with North in the NSC in 81 remember his assignments. And in 1981, when the martial law plan was being generated, this is the time period where William French Smith objected to it, but we didn't learn about it in the media until 1984. They had 3 jolly years to put that together and mind control this president and get into power the things they wanted in power. And this article said the transfer of North from FEMA to Central America came after North took a personal interest in Nicaragua. He knew that the State Department's hands would be tied and the government agency's hands would be tied after 1984, so he went down there to help the rebels. Their hands were tied because of the mining of the harbor, because the possibility of a confrontation that Congress was not notified, because of tortures in Central America, because talk of drug traffic and so forth and so on. And this article concludes with many of the jobs that North had, a liaison constantly with the Marines and the Special Forces, the National Security Council, the State Department, Office of Public Diplomacy, working with Carl Spitz Channel, with FEMA, with the Argentine military junta. Well, you'll see Ollie North for the whole week, but if you believe that he did all of this with his little head and the president's head in the sand, then I don't know how you can claim to be sane if you believe that they passed this story on us at this time in history. There's a lot of good material coming out, and I don't think this will hold unless Reagan declares the national emergency in the Gulf. I hope Congress stops him. I hope he doesn't get a provocation. He loves that kind of thing. Well, I'm going to conclude this part of World Watchers now and tell you again the views expressed in this show are those of myself and do not necessarily or at all reflect, well, maybe not necessarily reflect the views of Kazoo's staff and board of directors. And again, we want to thank Coast Components at 684-1185, the Monterey Barriers distributor of electronic components, Thank you for the underwriting grant that brought you this past hour of World Watchers. My name is Mae Brussel. This is the conclusion of the first part of the raw news as it is. And now the second hour, I want to hear from you and see how you think or feel about these things. This is KAZU, Pacific Grove, California. Pacific Grove Radio with a choice.